It's time to talk about decolonising Australia. Join me, Rima Ratan, as I ask First Nations Australians about how they are decolonising and what settlers can do to help. Decolonising Australia, Monday nights at 6 p.m. on 3CR. Welcome to Decolonising Australia, part of 3CR's special summer programming. I'm Rima Ratan. Today I'm talking about efforts towards decolonising in the art world, and my guests are curator Clotilde Bullen and artist Megan Cope. Clotilde is a curator of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander collections and exhibitions at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Sydney. She's a Noongar Aboriginal woman with English and French heritage. I spoke to her on the phone a couple of weeks ago.
So when I saw you at the decolonising art panel that MUMA put on in September, you were the first person I heard distinguish between decolonising and indigenising. Are you able to start by explaining the two concepts and how they're different?
Well, they're really, really different. The main reason being that when you talk about indigenising, when I talk about it as an Aboriginal woman, I'm centering my own perspective and my own cultural beliefs and background and values and what's important to me, I'm centering that. So that's not in relation to anything. It is using myself and my own culture as the centre and spreading out from that and understanding the world through that lens. When we talk about decolonising, we're really talking about a pre-existing Western structure or series of structures and kind of frameworks that already exist that privilege, Western sort of values and perspectives. And it's important to decolonise those, but they don't centre Aboriginal perspectives within that space.
How does someone like me, a settler Australian, am I able to indigenise?
No, I don't think so, because I think your mission is probably to decolonise. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's sort of two different ways of seeing that. Indigenising really happens, I guess, from a blackfellas perspective, and then decolonising happens from, non-Indigenous perspective, I suppose. So I think that's the big difference. It's not possible through a Western lens to centre Aboriginal perspectives and values. And that's okay, just as it's not possible for us to centre Western narratives and Western values and perspectives. So they sort of sit side by side, and the work has to be done, I think, in both areas in order to sort of sit within a bit of a third space between them.
How do you define this third space?
I've been thinking sort of about the third space for a while. I did an exhibition called The National, and we talked, one of the key, because I collaborated with a non-Indigenous curator, wonderful curator called Anna Davis, and she is white Australian, and we had to really discuss this idea underpinning the exhibition of the way in which we were collaborating as curators from a black and a white perspective, and where we met in the middle, where we could find equity in that and what that would mean for the exhibition. When you think about the third space, there's a couple of people who have posited it through a social psychology sort of perspective, which is about almost like a Venn diagram where you have overlapping circles, and that bit in the middle where there's a hybridity of culture and values that can be articulated within that space in an equitable way, that's that third space.
How do you practice? I mean, you brought up a collaboration you've done. You're a curator at the Museum of Contemporary Art. How do you practice indigenising in your work? Can you give us an example?
I mean, that's one really good example in terms of collaboration. I think collaboration from our perspective is quite different to perhaps what a curator or other people might sort of consider collaboration to be. Collaboration often for Western people means consultation. It means coming with an idea and going, is this going to be okay to do with you guys? True collaboration, I think, from our perspective, is really sitting down and going, is this what is it that you want to do? And if this thing happens, is it something that's bringing value to your own culture? And it's a really different sort of framework. So in terms of decolonising, that's one of the questions is, Did that Aboriginal group think about, wanting to do that? Is this something that they have said that they want to do? Is this something that's valued by that culture? And if not, why are we doing that? It's not true collaboration. So that's part of the way, that's part of the potential for decolonising in that space. In terms of indigenising within that space, particularly, like, for example, with the National, it was very difficult because we're working within a pre-existing institution which is framed in Western values. And so we had to think about, okay, what would an Indigenous space within that space look like? And that what we came up with was working with the traditional structures of men's and women's business in that space. So you would know, as most people do by now, that Aboriginal people often talk about men's and women's business. I just want to point out that might mean something from a white feminist perspective, but in terms of our cultural values, men's and women's business are valued equally, and there's equity between the two. They just do different things. So one's not more important than the other. And so we looked at men's and women's business in the space and how that might sort of play out between artists and in the actual layout of the works as well and the artists. So there was a couple of ways that we worked. But in terms of outside of the institution, there's a multitude of ways that people can look at decolonising their own collections or institutions or spaces, and then a multitude of ways in which Black Australia kind of worked to Indigenise spaces as well. So it sort of depends, I guess, what you're talking about. If you're talking about the arts, I think we have to get non-Indigenous people to sort of recognise and support the opening up and the disabling of systems and structures that have basically benefited and continue to benefit only them. I think that's really, really critical. And that is really the fundamental tenet behind decolonising.
Why, and this is going to sound like a terribly naive, if not offensive question, so I'm just warning you, why does Australia need to be decolonised or Indigenised?
I think that there's a need for all people who live on this continent to feel that we are part of one community and that acknowledge that we all have differences that make us relate to that place in different ways. Fundamentally, that would create an equitable connection or community with equitable rights. At this point in time in Australia, I think the conditions that we place upon not just Aboriginal people in this country, but migrants, asylum seekers, and a whole range of people who are not white, who are not white Australian, mean that many, many human rights are actually being abused. And a whole lot of people, particularly in this case Aboriginal people, are having a really terrible time of it. I know that you're going to be talking about education and about health and justice, but particularly in those areas we see Aboriginal people having terrible statistics. And I hate talking about statistics because I'm talking about real people, but there are terrible statistics in those areas about people not going through to year 12 and not having a tertiary education, about, you know, we have Closing the Gap, which is supposed to support Aboriginal people to have better health outcomes, particularly mental health, but the rates of suicide are massive, terrible health outcomes for Aboriginal people. Our age in which, you know, men and women die in our communities is 20 years below that of any white Australian. In terms of justice, we are 3% of the population and 35% of the population in prisons are Black people. And in terms of the arts, we create, you know, $500 million Indigenous arts industry in this country, but we have less than a handful of people, curators, for example, or arts workers who are kind of running this show, and certainly no Indigenous directors or people who can create structural change in the arts. So there's a complete inequity of kind of the ways in which we participate in Australian life and in the community. So I think if you care about that, and many, many people in Australia do, I think it's important to start addressing that. The problem is, of course, is that change and the giving away of power is very confronting for people and for people whose power benefits them. So that's the difficulty, that's the challenge.
So in a way, you need enthusiasm equally from First Nations people as well as settler Australians to kind of, you know, take on the Indigenising on one hand and the decolonising and sort of work towards this goal,
yeah,
in parallel.
It's a partnership, and I don't mean, I hate this word reconciliation. I don't actually necessarily agree with that, because I think that reconciliation implies that there's an equitable relationship between two parties. Actually, in this country, there's not. So it's not about us reconciling to, you know, white Australia, I don't think. It's more about, okay, first of all, how do we look at ourselves? How do we actually critically sort of approach the sort of decentralisation of power? And that's a huge thing. And then how do you invite people into that space? And for me, that third space is the critical area. That's where we do it.
I think the hard part is when you're challenging people's power, that, you know, they entrench social power and all that thing, you do invite a massive backlash. So I feel like the movement would face much resistance from centres of power.
It always has. We've got a history of revolution and people protesting and lots of Aboriginal activists in this country. And it always has faced that. But more and more, I see there's a backlash towards this idea of, you know, what, you know, the uprising of the right and fascism and all those sorts of things across the globally. Like, this is happening globally. It's not just Australia. And I think that one of the things that Aboriginal cultures represent in this country is this idea of sort of social cohesion and community. And people more and more are really disenfranchised with, you know, that kind of right-wing capitalistic sort of way of thinking. And so people are actually wanting to find, you know, to understand and to embrace other values, I think, and are looking for ways to do that. I really do think that's happening at the moment.
It's been 240-odd years. Why now? How is it that we may have reached some sort of a critical mass?
Yeah, good question. I think Aboriginal people are moving beyond the survival sort of mode. I think for the first couple of hundred years, people were just surviving. They were literally just trying to recover from, you know, the genocides and the massacres and all sorts of things that actually killed so many Aboriginal people certainly in the first 50 years of the colony, but, you know, after that as well with the Stolen Generation, what happened there, and, you know, all those things. So I think people are now, there's a critical point that people have hit where we're moving past survival. We're actually looking at, all right, if you look at Maslow's the triangle, the hierarchy of needs, when you move past survival and you've got food and you've got water and you've got all those things, and I'm not suggesting that all Aboriginal people have all those things either if you look at remote communities.
But, absolutely, yeah.
But when you move past that point, what comes next? And the top point is self-actualization, and I think we're not there yet, but I think people have realised and harnessed the power of social media as well, so that's been a really big part of it, I think.
Yeah.
That information and the traction of information in a much broader sort of global community with other First Peoples from other countries has actually been really important and really critical in that fight as well.
What advice would you give to settler Australians like myself about when I encounter art? How do I do it in a better way, I suppose? How do I decolonise my gaze?
Well, one thing I would say is that there's never an end point. It's like everything. I'm a firm believer in kind of growth and evolution, and personally, through your community, and also globally. So I think there's never an end point. I think we can always, all of us, do better. But I think as you're talking about this and you're recognising some of these issues, you're actually critically reflecting upon, you know, the part that you're playing within that. And that's the first step, is actually even just recognising that. So I think that's really important. And then I think another important thing to do is to put away that kind of, all of us get defensive when we're confronted with something that's difficult and change and all those things. We do. It's a natural sort of defence mechanism. And I think it's important to place that to one side. So to still be able to feel that, and you're going to feel that, but to place it to one side and go, but if I can step out of that for a moment into like the third person, what then do I understand about this? What can I take from this? What can I learn from this? And I honestly think that in terms of Aboriginal art, I think, well, you know, one of the key reasons why I have been a curator for such a long time, 16 years now, is because art creates a mechanism for people to not have to share the English language and to actually confront people without making people defensive. You can step into it. You know, you can take your experience to that, and it does different things for different people. So I think that's, art is a really wonderful way to be able to do that. I think the other thing to remember too is that it's really good to be an ally, and it's good to also not speak for Aboriginal people. There's some wonderful people who have the best intentions, but start overstepping the mark a bit and actually start speaking for Aboriginal people, and that's recolonising. That's taking the agency away from that Aboriginal person. So I think it's really critical to sort of keep checking yourself, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's almost like mindfulness you're talking about, isn't it? Kind of being
absolutely
aware of yourself, yeah, in a situation.
Yep, absolutely. I think that's important for all of us. I don't think that's just a thing for white Australians, but for all people. Because, again, it's about growth and it's about evolution. So I think mindfulness is really critical. But it's more than that. It's being willing to do the work. Because our relationship, the relationship between Aboriginal people in this country and non-Indigenous Australians, is so damaged. It was created through a horrific beginning. And I think it's really difficult to understand the place of Aboriginal people without knowing Aboriginal people and speaking to people and understanding and giving empathy. I think that's the other critical thing about decolonising, is that part of that is developing your own sense of empathy for other human beings. I don't think we can forget that. I think this is happening a lot in the world, that we're forgetting our empathy, but it's really critical.
I've heard people speak out against empathy. I can't possibly know what it's like to have my children taken away. It feels like I have no right to claim empathy.
I don't Well, this is the way I see it. The way I see it is that it's understanding that your neighbour is a human with feelings, just as you have them, with needs, with values, and they might be different to yours. But respectful empathy is really about allowing space for that. It's about saying, okay, well, I don't understand, I haven't been through that, but I understand what pain feels like, and I understand that, God, if I was taken away from my mum when I was little because of the colour of my skin or whatever, I think that would hurt a lot. I think that would create trauma for me. And so I'm going to allow you some space and respect that. And that's really all it's about. It's kind of relating to your neighbour as a human being and not as a statistic. And I hate quoting statistics for that reason, because we're all made up of personal stories. But it's kind of relating to each other as human beings individually, but also recognising that the structure in which we exist, the Western structures, are fundamentally and inherently have prejudice, and they are fundamentally racist structures in that they don't support people of colour, migrant, you know, anyone else that's not Western. So I think there's two things. This thing comes up a lot where people, individuals say, but hang on, I'm not racist because I have an Aboriginal friend, or I did, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's relating on an individual level, and that might be very true, but they still benefit from the systems, the white systems that support their power. And so it's partly it's dismantling that, but whilst acknowledging that individually, you know, you can grow your empathy to your neighbour.
I think people often bring racism down to interpersonal relationships, whereas it's actually structures. In their social structures.
It's structural. It's inherently structural. When we start recognising that, the defensiveness can be sort of dismantled a bit, I think.
Yeah, because we're all subject to the structures, you know.
Right.
I'm not a white person, but I'm structured, you know,
you have to deal with it.
Might be self-loathing rather than contempt for brown people. It's still doing its thing.
You're listening to Decolonising Australia, a short series that's part of our special summer programming here on 3CR. My next guest is artist Megan Cope, who I spoke to earlier today.
My name is Megan Cope. I'm a Kwandamooka woman from southeast Queensland. Mindjeriba is North Stradbroke Island, and that's where my father's family are from. I live in Melbourne now, and I've lived here on the lands of the Wurundjeri people for about 6 years.
Can you tell me a little bit about your art practice?
Yeah, so my practice is about identity, geography, history and the environment, and I use a painting practice, video and more recently sculpture to kind of resist notions or prescribed notions of Aboriginality. So my work is always directly responding to things that are happening in the environment that then impact Aboriginal people and challenging our position or our disposition within these conversations that occur within the grand narrative or within the media.
Can you give an example of a project you've done or something like that and how it does that?
Well, I guess the most recent showing of an artwork I have been, it's like a series, and I've been working on it and developing it over the last 3 years, is Reformation. Reformation draws from our middens, which are Aboriginal shell piles, and this work came out of discussions that were happening up home on our Kwandamooka country about the ending of the sand mining industry that's been going since the 50s. And from that, I wanted to broaden the discussion of extractive industries on our country. And so that led me to talking about the first wave of mining, which was created by the lime burning industry. And the lime burning industry relied on our shell piles to make lime. Another thing in my work is that I'm always trying to challenge white Australia's concept of time. So I wanted to critique mining and our concept of time, but also how Australia views Aboriginal peoples' civilization or communities. And these shell piles, I've been trying to argue, are forms of Aboriginal architecture, and within that then expose the removal of these architectural forms and how the colonial project works in its extraction of Aboriginal settlement or lives in a place and replaces it with its own. To describe what it looks like is the first iterations were a series of handmade concrete oyster shells, hand cast and then embedded in ilmenite, which is a black mineral sand that's been extracted from our country. And then to accompany that one, Reformation 1, I did Reformation 2, which was beer cans, which I smashed into the shape of oyster shells and lodged those into silica, which is the white mineral sand that has also been extracted from our country for a very long time. So these two works started that discussion about the extractive industries and then the impact on our peoples and then into contemporary life today. The third iteration of that, I wanted to upscale to kind of begin illustrating the magnitude or the scale of the middens before they were mined. And the first one was shown in the National in 2017, and we made 12,000 hand cast concrete shells for this, and it stood about 1.5 metres high, which is not even getting close to the size of what our shell piles were before they were extracted. That one I called Dubba Gully in brackets to connect to the Aboriginal Gadigal midden that was at Dubba Gully where the Sydney Opera House sits today, and that was recorded to be 15 metres high and 100 metres long. That midden was burnt and reduced to a lime composite to build the Governor's House and many of the early foundations of the city of Sydney.
Why do you think art in Australia needs decolonising?
Well, we need to understand the history of this country and recognise it as a settler colonial state in order for us to all have a future here.
In a companion interview in this show, Clotilde Bullen, a curator from the Museum of Contemporary Art, mentions that the Indigenous Australians producers offer art industry that's worth about $500 million, but it mainly benefits white people. Do you want to comment on that?
We know that's true because, as Vernon Arkey says, Aboriginal people are still living in third world conditions. So, you know, we can argue this all we like, and we can say, oh, well, Aboriginal people are benefiting from this industry, and yes, we are, and so we should have the right to generate our livelihood from art, but we know that Aboriginal art industry is a white thing because Aboriginal communities throughout this country are still living in what is described as third world conditions. We know that we're not benefiting from this industry or that this industry is corrupt, and it's obvious who it serves.
What advice would you give to people, industry insiders, on how to decolonise?
Lately, I've been thinking a lot about the fossil fuel industry, and institutions do need to do a lot more in terms of changing their system, changing the members of their board, changing their priorities in terms of representation of Indigenous people and the kind of work and the conversations that are generated in these spaces. I think that decolonisation requires employment and inclusion of multiple Indigenous voices and people. And I think that it's also time that we start broadening this as well and to look to Oceania, look to First Nations peoples in the Americas, and really start implementing anti-colonial entropies into the institutions.
What about people who are outside of the industry? Someone like me, I'm not an artist or a curator, I'm not involved, but I'm a consumer of art. What should I bring when I'm looking at Indigenous art?
It's so complex. I mean, we've got, you know, in Australia, we've got an understanding of traditional practices, and then we've got contemporary Australian Indigenous art, you know, and the latter is often connected to the urban Aboriginal expression and, you know, conversations that and works that document and discuss our existence in the cities and urban spaces and regional centres as well. And then you've got the more traditional contemporary art practice, which centres itself around that movement that came out of Rex Batterby's visit to the Punyatula and then that industry being created there. So I think when people come to look at art, I can't really, you know, I find it really difficult to kind of prescribe what people should be thinking and doing. I guess all you could hope for is that people actually are open to learning about the stories that Aboriginal people are telling within their works, and then to question where they are in relation to this work and to these stories as Australians, perhaps. And so when non-Aboriginal people do that, you can then identify your responsibility in the issues that we might be discussing. If we are going to succeed with a process of decolonisation in an art context, it's critical that this process goes outside of art as well and into the everyday lives of people, and that it's not just the artist's responsibility to do this. I mean, we are in lots of ways a social barometer of society. You know, we're very sensitive people, we're very caring people, you know, we make works about things that we feel are unjust or need to be discussed that aren't being discussed in the media. But we also need Indigenous scholarship, we need lawyers, we need activists also contributing to the discourse and all yarns that we're having so that we do start to connect with people outside of the arts. I think that that's really important. And we also need to start identifying ways to legally overthrow the issues that the law perpetuates and reinforces as the colonial structure and power. I think that we really need to understand that the colonial process is centred around the elimination of all living things, and anyone that wants to live a life, and a decent one, needs to understand that the colonial project doesn't want that. It doesn't have a long term. It's not there. It's not a long game. It doesn't understand time in the same way that Aboriginal people and Indigenous people the world over understand it.
How do Indigenous people understand time?
Well, our sense of time predates colonial occupation for a start, and I think that that's a good thing to ponder on and think about. You know, I think that a lot of people don't think beyond the foundations of the settlement. And if they do, they imagine it in a very kind of faux spiritual kind of way, and that's useless. I don't think that that's useful in terms of our future. When we think about pre-colonial time, we need to centre it around law of the land and custodianship and life before the industrial complex.
You've been listening to Decolonising Australia on 3CR, and that was artist Megan Cope talking about her work. Earlier, we heard from the MCA's curator of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander collections and exhibitions, Clotilde Bullen. That's it from me this week. We're going out with an excellent choice of song by Clo. This is Baker Boy with Black Magic, featuring Dallas Woods.
Black magic, either you do or don't have it. Young, black, and gifted, talking the whole package. Magic, magic, lights, camera, action. You are now witnessing the power. Mirror, billy, limo, buna, mirror, numa, machi, muna, mirror. You are billy, ni, you are billy, naraka, you are billy, limo, malaganga, brain, uini. Namanika, yaku, yindi, malanguni, wala, palanya, billy, naku, naraka, ni, yaka, guring, urati, kumur, yurga, para, ki, marki, marki, marki. You don't know what to do, cargo, gamble, marang, you're a black kid. Then you will be known as unstoppable. Peace. We used to be together, living happily, beautiful weather. Thought it was forever, calling mama Venus. Take a word with you, ngara tumara, numa line. Na putuga, let you come, na nina, yala line. Reminiscing, chilling, fishing, laying down eyes closed. Sticky missions, twisting, flipping, spitting. You'll want my dog, representing ngara kumala. This is how I wanna live, but welcome, marga, tuka, proud. Nina, yapa, ali, black magic. Either you do or don't have it. Young, black, and gifted, talking the whole package. Magic, magic, lights, camera, action. You are now witnessing the power of black magic. Black magic. You are now witnessing the power of black magic. Black magic. You are now witnessing the power. When we gonna see another Mabo? Someone who really cares about tomorrow, not about where to get his next Badu. We need more Cathy Freemans, possibly more Freeman. These days blacks getting locked up for no reason. I should roach them while I'm preaching. Arms for the beggar man, they took our children away apparently for the better man. Now they take our land, big money for the settlement. Kevin Rudd said sorry and they thought that it was settled. But that ain't settled shit, middle finger to politicians. The day I listen will be the day that I see a difference. Our people in Windham gonna see Kafanova prison. They think that it's living but it isn't. See a different vision. Young, black, and talented, we all fit the description. What a time to be alive, boy, I die for my district. Vivid picture, the lyrical, now maturing. And I'm pointing out my skin, Nicki Weimer, boy, you know I'm black magic. Either you do or don't have it. Young, black, and gifted, talking the whole package. Magic, magic, lights, camera, action. You are now witnessing the power of black magic. Power. You are now witnessing the power.
kanyam tu nangara kumangin guna kunyur mabalanda mulkurgo.
Black skin, white skin, centuries fighting. Straight to the point like I just stuck the knife in.
Throw me to the bush, come out as a warrior. Put me in the city, come out as a prime minister.
If you don't wanna close the gap, then close your gap. Heat a combo, I'm cold like that.
Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. For more information and to donate online, go to 3cr.org.au. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.